I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the second part of the interview with Kevin King. Quite a lot of you have been reaching out to me in the Facebook group saying how fantastic you found the content, and a couple of you privately as well, actually. And yeah, the man is a powerhouse. It's absolutely straight talking. It's based on a serious amount of business experience. He's been an entrepreneur since he was 17 and now in his mid-40s, and a lot of product creation experience specifically. Also, he's just a man who does things on a big scale and on a proper, you know, thorough sort of style as well. So Kevin's a very exciting man to listen to. He's got a lot of very, very detailed things to say and a lot of mindset stuff as well. So listen closely, take notes as ever, listen to the show notes, which I've, as usual, spent about an hour and a half compiling and editing. I've had somebody else working on the job with me as well, so it's a big job. Really, really worth reading those as well. www.amazingfba.com/58, as ever, the number of the episode. So without any more ado, I'm going to hand back over to Kevin King. I love what you're saying. There's some amazing big picture strategic level stuff here, and it's very sophisticated stuff indeed. Amazing things to go and implement. Could you sort of dial it back in for the people who are listening who are starting out, either because they haven't got a product live yet or they're still at the research stage, or maybe they've got their first two or three products live and they're looking at, you know, scaling up or revising their approach? What would your advice be for starting off? Let's put some figures on you. Absolutely right. Let's say they've got, say, $10,000 to invest in this, so that they've got they can put some skin in the game, they can put 20 hours a week in it, but they've still got a day job providing some kind of income stream.
Well, if they got $10,000, my strategy is, everybody teaches you need to find something that's small, lightweight, that you can ship by air shipment and fits in a shoebox. And I think that's the exact wrong thing to do, because that's what everybody else is doing. That is the easy way, but I think your chances of spending a bunch of money and having a product that's going to take you a year to sell your first 500 or 1,000 of them are pretty high by doing that. I think you need to go play where the other people aren't playing. Play in a different sandbox. And there's a lot less competition, and that's what I do. I don't have anything that's oversized right now. I will have that in the fall. I'm working on a product right now that will be considered oversized. But you don't need to go into the oversized. Still stay in that standard size category. So it's going to be very similar cost and fulfillment cost as the what fits in a shoebox. But you can go outside of it. I have products in the kitchen category, and rather than doing a spatula and a garlic press and a barbecue gloves or whatever, actually doing types of cookware, you know, that goes on the stove or whatever. So they're bigger, you know, they're the size of a large Frisbee or whatever, you know, and the box is much larger and they weigh 3 or 4 pounds piece in the packaging box. So those are not things I'm going to air freight over unless I have super high margins on them. So that it's a longer process. So they're going to come by sea. But at the end of the day, I don't have near the competition, and I can sell those usually at a higher margin. So rather than making $3 or $4 per sale after everything's said and done, I can make 10 or 20. So my recommendation is look for something that's your cost is at least at a bare minimum. You can mark it up 3 times and that's after shipping costs. So if you find a product that's costing you $2 from the factory, you need to add in your inspection costs. And by the way, nothing and absolutely nothing should ever, 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 ever leave China without an inspection.
Amen to that. Amen to that.
A lot of people skip on this. Even if you do one of the cheapo inspection services for $100, I don't recommend that. But even if you're trying to save money, at least do that. Mine costs $248 and I do it every time and not just the first time. Even as I've got the company now, I'm about to place the 6th order for them. And they're like, oh, we'll just ship it on to you. You know, everything's been fine before. I'm like, no, my inspector's coming before I pay you that other 70%. Because I find problems a lot. I've averted disasters several times. And sometimes it's a minor issue, but I get them to fix it there rather than fix it here. I don't ship anything directly to FBA. I know that's, if you're outside the U.S., it's not really, you can't really do that. You got to ship it into FBA. You got to hire a company here. But you need to factor, if you have to hire an FBA prep company or something, you need to factor that into your costs. So you take the cost from the factory, the cost to get it into the United States, if that's where you're going, and the cost of prep work, repackaging or whatever, and getting into Amazon, and then multiply that by 3. And if you can't sell the product for a multiple of three after you've added those costs, then find something else.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Absolutely.
Unless the product is a high-end product where it's selling for 100, say it's selling for 100 bucks, and you can get them for, after everything's said and done, let's say it costs you 40 bucks. Well, 40 times three is 120, so that doesn't meet that rule. But there's enough margin in there that you can still play. So if you're going with something that's less that sells for less than $50 retail, it needs to be at least a 3x markup. 5x is better. If you can hit 5x, those are fewer and harder to find now because a lot of people there's a lot of competition in those. But if you can find that, and a lot of times it's not the glamorous products, it's the boring office supply stuff, or it's the boring something that's more boring. It's all about money. It's money's not boring. So think of the money as the excitement, not that you're bragging to your friends that you're selling a cool barbecue glove or whatever. And stay away from anything that's ever been given as an example in any course or anywhere online. You see it all the time. People will, I think the guy Jungle Scout, Greg Mercer, he did a case study on his blog where he launched a product and kind of walked everybody through it. And that's a good way to go look at his blog on Jungle Scout. And he kind of walks you through the product selection process and walks you through the launch. And I think Manuel called Dojo.
Import Dojo, yeah. Manuel Beckfire, yeah. We've had him and Greg, indeed. We had Manuel last person on the podcast, yeah.
Yeah, he just did a case study too with a tea kettle. Greg did it with some sort of bamboo sticks or something. But as soon as that, there's like 500 other people doing bamboo sticks. They just copy. That's not the way to do it. You're not going to be successful. You're going to wonder why you can't quit your job. So find something that has at least a 3x or 5x if you're selling it for less than $50. Play outside of play in a different sandbox than everybody else. And then be willing to spend a little of that $10,000 you have on creating good images. Send it off to somewhere like Upgraded Images. Don't shoot them with your cell phone. Don't have your buddy that's got a camera come over and do it. You can tell online. People can tell. Some people get away with it, but it's going to make a difference. Even if it makes one extra sale a day, let's say you had to spend $500 to get good photography done, and you're making $10 per unit every time you sell one. If you sell one extra one a day, in a month and a half, you have that back. And then you're off to the races after that. You're beating everybody else. So you have to think of it long term. Don't think of it what's happening right now. And then get some good lifestyle and get good images. The one thing I've noticed on Amazon is a lot of people don't read your copy. Your bullet points and your description are primarily there for the search engine so that Amazon knows where to list you. Most people I've found, because I put stuff in the bullet points, like gibberish stuff, or said, enter this code and you can have this product 100% free, and nobody does it. One person did it out of like 50 orders. So that just tells you people don't read that. They might skim it. The diehards that are trying to debate between two different products or very skimpy with their money, they might actually read your bullets and read your description. Or if it's a very technical product and you need a lot of technical explanation for it, they might read it. But for the vast majority, they don't read it. They look at your title. Some of them don't even read the whole title, especially if it's one of those big spammy titles. Look at your title, your price, and your pictures and make a decision. And you have to remember about 60 to 70% of the sales coming on Amazon in the United States are from mobile devices. So they're smartphones or iPads. And so they only see the first three bullets and they only see the first 200 characters of your description. So you have to win them. And those first three bullets have to be strong. Fourth and fifth should be your weaker point. To test this, moving them around. But you can take your fourth bullet, put it in the second spot, and you might see a lift in sales. That's because on mobile, people only see three and they got to click a button to see the other two. And the first 200 characters of your description are important. I see a lot of people waste those first 200 characters of their description with a bunch of gibberish. Oh, this is the best product and you deserve to have this or whatever. No, sell them on the product in those first 200 characters and fill up every single image spot. I think Amazon gives you 9, and I think the first 7 show unless you click to enlarge and then scroll through the little viewer and you see the last couple. Fill them all up and make sure they're high resolution. I do at least 1500 by 1500. And above. Once you've found a product either on Alibaba or Global Expresses or one of the other, or if you're doing something from in the States, you got to get developed packaging and put your logo on it. Some of my factories will do that. They'll actually put the logo on it and put it on all the pieces. Get that if you can and do all your product photography, then create your box, your packaging. And then in the same time, you have to do research to create your box because you got to find out what keywords, you know, how to describe it on the box. I put an instruction sheet in everything I do that asks for a review. Asks for them to register the product. And I'll have instructions and tips. And then you get your product, you get it over. And then once it's arrived and gone through it, it's time to launch it.
Great. So tell us about product launches. One thing I know you're very, very strong on. So we've spent a lot of time on the products, and I think that's no bad thing because that is really where a lot of people just skimp. But tell us about the launch.
You don't have a product, you're never going to succeed. I mean, you might, if your product has to be good and it has the quality, don't skimp on product quality. I mean, you might be able to skimp initially and sell 1,000, 2,000, maybe even 5,000. But as soon as those reviews start catching up with you and the returns start coming in on Amazon, you're going to be dead in the water. On your product, make sure it's a good, solid product. Use it yourself. I've found, at least for me, the more I know about a certain area, the better I can market it. So if it's something I really don't know much about, it's harder to market it. But if it's something I know about or have some experience with, it's a lot easier to market because I can relate. And that's what I do when I develop the products that I create myself, that I don't just private label it. There's stuff that I would want. And as a customer, what would I buy? But to launch the product, what I do initially is I try to get, if it's coming by sea, or even if it's not coming by sea, if they're making 1,000 for me, I try to get them to send, as soon as there's 10 of them ready or something, I try to get them to send them over to me. Send me the first 10 off the line. And even if I don't do that, if it goes through an inspection first and then the rest are coming by sea, I'll say, send me a box of 10, 20, 30, whatever, you know, fits in one box. And I'll pay it. It costs me through the nose a little bit to get it here, but I'll get one case over. And then I take those and you can use Google to do it, or you can use their software that does it. And I'll go and I look for the top reviewers that have reviewed some of the products. There's one called like Review Sniper.
I was going to say, can you mention it? Yeah, Review Sniper. That sounds good. Any other?
It does it. There's, I think AMZ Suite has something that you can look up the top 10,000. But you can go to Google and do it too. You can take an ASIN of a competitor and go to Google and type, I forget the exact syntax, but it's like URL equals Amazon.com and then the space ASIN and then space top 500 or top, and put that in quotes, or top 1,000, and you'll find some of your competitors that are top reviewers that review competitor products. It takes a little longer that way. And then I reach out to them and I don't send them some long-winded email that's, oh, I've got the greatest new product, you're going to love it. I let the product speak for itself, and I put something in the subject line. I just did this Friday when I launched this other product I was telling you about. I go and I look at their reviews, and if it's a dog product, for example, I customize it to the person. So I sent out like 12 or 15 emails to top reviewers, and I got, I think 11 of them responded saying send it.
Wow, that's an amazing response.
What I do in the subject line is if they were talking about their dog in another review and their dog's name is Milo, I'll put in the subject line, Milo will love this. It's not, hey, I got a great new spatula or a great new product. It's customized, so they're going to open it. And then in the email, I just put something very brief. Hi, Michael. I have a great new product that Milo might be interested in trying out. Here's a link to it, and this is the Amazon link. Let me know if you're interested in receiving a complimentary one in exchange for your honest opinion. Thanks. That's it. I don't put anything. I don't trouble them with trying to sell them right there. Let them go click on the link. If they think it looks cool, they'll get back to me. And they usually do.
Wow, I love that approach. It's so different from the usual spammy, everything's the most wonderful thing, slint sliced bread approach. And by the way, I don't know who you are.
Exactly. These guys get emails. You have to remember, these guys, some of them probably get, I heard a podcast with one of them, someone did 6 months ago or something. And she's like, I get like a 200 emails a day. You know, some of it's stuff that I love to review and some of it's just garbage. So they're inundated. And so you have to stand out. And then I don't follow up with them. I mean, out of those 11 that I sent out, you know, there's going to be a couple of them that just disappear off the face of the earth. And that's okay. You just got to expect that. But probably 6, 7, 8 of them will actually write a review. I don't follow up with them. I mean, unless I discover some issue or there's some reason to. I mean, I might do one follow up a week later after I know they've had it and say, it's a simple follow-up. It's like, hey, Michael, I hope the item arrived okay. Let me know if you have any questions. Looking forward to your comments. And that's it. I don't say, hey, I sent this to you for free. Why didn't you write me a review? You know, you can't do that. And it's successful. So I'll do that to get the initial reviews, because all you really need is 5 to 10 initial reviews to get the ball rolling. You don't need 50. You don't need 100. I turn on pay-per-click, like this one I just did Friday initially, and I put it a really high bid. Put it like $5. I'm not going to pay $5 a bid, but I put it $5 because I need to make sure that I get some impressions for a couple days just to validate my product, to make sure that Amazon is not showing this dog product under the fish category. You know, I'm getting a lot of
yeah, they do occasionally do something that dumb. It's true.
Let's say goldfish tanks or something, you know, and I'm paying a lot. So make sure I validate it. And sometimes I put it on an automatic campaign. I have all my keywords. I've done all my research for, you know, to write my listing and stuff. So I've done it right. It should match up, but I just verified. And sometimes that automatic campaign will give you a couple other words you might have missed or something that, oh, wow, that's a good phrase there. I kind of overlooked that people call it this as well as that. So go back and put that in the listing. And then after a couple of days, I dial back that pay-per-click way, way down because like to 50 cents from $5. So it's still running, still getting a little bit of data. Any sales I get is just gravy. I'm not expecting any sales. Like I told you, I had three last Friday. I think one of them was from the pay-per-click, two of them are organic. I've had one or two over the holiday weekend since then. But anything I get's gravy. I don't care. You really need those reviews in there before you can really start ramping anything up. So once I get these 5 or 10 guys, you know, out of these 11 that said send it to me, as soon as they get it, they'll get it this week. And some of that, I don't ship it through Amazon. I used to have Amazon ship it, but now I ship it directly to them because in there I put the marketing. I put copies of all the pictures and everything so that they have that handy. It just gives a little extra information. And then I also go out. I use a service for this, actually. You can find it yourself, but it's critical to have a video review on your listing. And that video, a good video review really needs to be on your first page. You know, when you first hit the product, they show the top 4 or 5 reviews there by default. You have to scroll. If you get a video review down the road, it might get buried down on page 12 or something if you have a lot of reviews and it takes a while to get it upvoted. If you have a video review up there from the get-go or from very early on, its likelihood of sticking to that first page is pretty high. Because people will see it in the beginning and they'll be saying, yes, this helped me or whatever. So I go out and I use a service that actually has people that like to do video reviews. And so I'll send this particular product has 2 variations. So I sent 3. I had him find me 6 people, 3 for each variation. And I send them the product. And probably one of them will never do a review. It'll just disappear. So I'm expecting to get 4 video reviews off of it. And so that'll be some of the initial reviews, and that'll help. That dramatically helps the product.
Wow, very powerful.
Having a video review, even if it's a simple spatula, even if it's a simple, it's something that holds, it's a paper holder that holds paper on your desk, and it's kind of boring. Have a video review demonstrating it, someone talking about it. So once those come in, then I'll go and I'll lower the price on the product. Prices right now is at full price. I'll then go in. It's a $49 product. I'll go in, I'll lower that price probably to $19. And once I have those first reviews and those video reviews in place, I'll lower it to about $19 and I'll turn on pay-per-click aggressively. And so I'll probably start getting a lot of sales for 3 or 4 or 5 days, maybe 40, 50 a day. That way they're all verified. Anybody that writes reviews on them, even though I lower the price, it's a much better way than doing it in a discount club because that's the price. It's $19.95 they bought it for. It's not at 50% off with a coupon or 80% off with a coupon. So, and because it's a low price, it'll get a lot of buys. If my conversion rates will go really high, I'm losing money on every single one of them, but that's okay. It's a cost of entry and it's a cost of establishing yourself. So then I'll run that for 100 or 200 units, depending on the category. That gets a lot of keyword association. So you're going to start whatever's in your title. All those phrases are going to start correlating into the Amazon database saying, hey, product, show it when people type for this because people buy it. And then I'll start raising the price after a couple hundred. I'll raise it to $24.95, then $29.95. And then eventually I'll get back up to $49.95 on this product. And that's where it'll stay. Unless for some reason I need to raise it because I'm about to go out of stock. But you have to be careful on how high you raise it because Amazon will take your buy box away. Even if you're a private label seller and the only one, if you raise it too high, if you go out of range, they call it, they think there's an error. So you have to be careful there. So eventually it'll get back up. Almost all of my products, I look at the first 1,000 unit order as a break even. I just had one product I launched in March. I've actually, I had to raise the price dramatically because I only had like 30 left and I have the new shipment that hasn't arrived yet. So my sales have almost stalled on that one, but I still have a few coming in every day. But that particular product, I've actually lost $7,000 on selling the first 1,000 units after advertising cost, after product cost, after everything I've done. But that's okay because I'm buying my position. It's a very highly competitive area. And I've made it to page 2. And so I'll have to spend a little bit more when I get my next shipment in. And then after that, I'll be coasting. I'll be on page 1 and I'll start making serious money. So it's an upfront investment to get that positioning.
Wow, you really are very serious about your upfront investment. I like it. I have to say that a friend of mine who we may both know, but he hasn't given me permission to talk about his name, but he spent, I believe, $40,000 on giveaways to get on page one for the top six keywords, I should say, in his products. But then that's looking at the top 100 BSR, so seriously competitive. And he said, yeah, they made that money back within 4 weeks. So,
Once you get positioned, some categories, I have one product where I don't have to do that because there's just not much competition. And so I actually don't even do any advertising on it. I have a low auto bid that's like 11 cents or something just running, just so that Amazon sees that there's some advertising on it. It gives me a little bit of love. But in a highly competitive, you got to do that. Just good positioning. But it pays off. I mean, I have something in the exercise category. I did that last August. It launched in August. At first, I was selling one, two, three a day, and I just couldn't get past it. And so I started monkeying with it and I figured out what to do. And now that product sells about 20 a day and I make about $14 every time I sell one on that one product. So after advertising cost, I use software like Hello Profit. I think that's one of the best ones out there.
I was going to say, let's talk about advertising costs. And first of all, thank you so much for this. Again, it's proper business thinking. It's not just one size fits all, but it just depends on your marketplace, what you need to do. But yeah, tell me about that, because I found that personally, you know, not coming from such a sophisticated business background as yourself, I was losing money on products that on paper looked like they were doing well until I took my advertising cost into account. And then they were either breaking even or making a slight loss. So how do you assess that?
Well, there's a lot of people in this business that, you know, you see it in the groups that people post, you know, screenshots. Ah, I just hit 10,000 in sales. Or there's big podcasters or big guys out there that some people that run some Facebook groups that boast about their sales, and they 150 grand a month, or, you know, and everybody's like, oh, wow, how do you do that? And I take that with a grain of salt. I don't give a shit what your top line is. I want to know what you're making. And a lot of people, like what you just said, a lot of people have cash flow, but they don't have profit. They think they're making money because they've got 20 grand a month coming in from Amazon. Oh, but they don't really know what their costs are after everything's said and done. I have spreadsheets that I use for my upfront, so I know my first 1,000 units cost me this much. It may cost me $19 a unit because I had to pay for the trademark, I had to pay for the box design, I had to pay for the other one-time costs, so I build those in. And so I know, that's why I said earlier, usually my first 1,000 I don't make money, but I know on my reorder, instead of $19 a unit, they're $14. But then I factor in my spreadsheet after I have some data. I actually build it into the cost of goods sold, an advertising cost. So depending on the category, that could be $10 a sale. So if I have a product right now that I sell for $60, it cost me $20 in China to have it made. It's one of my custom products. It cost me about $1.50 to get it here. And then there's a few other little fees. So it's about $23 is my hard cost on it. And I sell it for $59. Well, Amazon typically takes about a third. By the time you add up all their fees, it's typically somewhere around a 33%, roughly. So if it's a $60 product, that means Amazon's roughly paying me $40. So that means I'm roughly making $17 on each one. Well, in my forecast, I know now on my pay-per-click what it really costs me. I will put a number for every single sale, not just what I sold through pay-per-click, but every single sale. So I say I can spend $10 per unit in advertising cost for this item. So instead of it costing me, actually I say $7 because I like to make at least $10 on everything I sell. So I'd say $23, I can spend $7 per unit sold on advertising. So that's $30 and I'll make $10 in profit. Well, that doesn't mean everything on pay-per-click is $7. That means I can, if my pay-per-click sales is half of my sales or a third of my sales, that means I can spend $21 on every sale on pay-per-click to keep the momentum going. So the ACOS, I would not go off ACOS on pay-per-click. It's a good baseline number just to look at, but you need to break it down. You need to export the search term report, bring it into Excel, and create a pivot table. And both Greg Mercer and Brian Bowman, who runs another podcast, and he's a pay-per-click expert. They have videos, and he has a video that explains how to do this, walks you step-by-step through it. And Greg Mercer did a blog post on Jungle Scout about how to do it. So if you don't know how to run Excel or Google Numbers or whatever it's called, they walk you through it, show you how to do it. But you need to create a pivot table, and you need to add some additional columns to it that show your cost, because ACOS is doesn't factor in the cost of your goods sold. It doesn't factor in if your price went up and down. Like when I did this 1990, you know, I said I lowered the price to 1995 and slowly raised it back to 49.95. Well, if I look at my lifetime A cost, it's almost meaningless because it's comparing it at different price points at different times. And so I can't make a decision on that. I have to download it and factor in my cost of goods sold, add that column, and see what I'm really making on every one of those sales. So I add another column and it'll say if I had 50 clicks on pay-per-click, it'll show me how much I made on sales, how much I spent. And I do some calculations to say, okay, this cost, I made $18 profit every time I sold one of these in pay-per-click. So that meets my formula. So you have to do some more advanced stuff like that if you really want to know.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, one thing that's kind of obvious when you think about it is that Amazon really doesn't want to make it obvious how much it's costing you in Amazon ads. And the ACoS thing kind of gives you a feeling of false sense of control, which is exactly what you're implying, really. So, and they probably know that most people are too lazy or just not competent enough to use an Excel spreadsheet. And I know for a lot of people that it makes their eyes glaze over. But I think that is where Amazon makes so much of a killing off us.
If you can or don't want to do that data analysis, hire someone to do it for you.
Exactly.
Critical.
Exactly. I mean, my accountant right now, I hope, is finally crunching through. He's not exactly the advertising cost side, but the entire accounts for my business just to reconcile my account software with the bank accounts, which for some reason I now understand the theory of it perfectly, but I can never get to work. And all I want from that is just an absolutely crystal clear breakdown of my costs so I know all the costs, breakdown as granular as possible so I really, really know what my costs are, because I think that's the side of it that it's so easy to overlook with Amazon because we're so used to if we don't have a product-based business, background like you, then if you just use it selling your time for money, you get excited by sales because if you're in the service industries or if you're an employee, time and sales equals your own money that you put in your pocket. But it is just so very, very different with products. I'm still finally making that mental adjustment that sales doesn't really matter. It's profit and you've got to fight to get those numbers.
And Hello Profit is a good piece of software. It's not perfect. It's got some issues, but it's I use it daily. I log into it 3 or 4 times a day. But you can go in there and you can put in what it cost you to manufacture the product. It'll automatically calculate the Amazon fulfillment fees. It'll automatically factor in on a per unit basis what you spent in advertising to advertise that particular unit. Factor that in. It'll automatically factor in returns. So take that off your profits and add back the fees that Amazon reimburses you. So that's a good starting point. It's not as good as having Xero or QuickBooks, you know, and like reconciling, like you said, which is what you really need to do too. But it's the best thing you can use to kind of keep an eye on what's happening and how you're. I would use Hello Profit to adjust my pay per clicks. I'll go into Hello Profit and I'll see this particular product. You know, I'm spending a couple $100 a day in pay per click on, and it's just not. My numbers aren't there. I'll go and dial something back, or I'll go play with the price, or I'll go adjust something. I recommend if you have more than one product. I mean, you could probably do this all manually if you just have one product. But if you have more than one product, at least give Hello Profit a try. I think they have a 21-day. I'm not pitching for them. I'm not associated with them. But I think they have a 21-day dollar trial or something. See if it helps you. The software will track some other stuff for you too, but you got to factor in the refunds too. And a lot of people don't do that.
No, you're quite right. And that's something I've been slack on. I realize, I mean, unfortunately, my refund rate so far has been pretty low with most of my products, but you're quite right that that's something I've been overlooking. So thanks for flagging that up. Now, just backpedaling a tiny bit to the whole keywords thing. You were saying, well, I've obviously done my keyword research before you do your listing creation. And then obviously before you do your Amazon ads work as well. What is your process for keyword research?
Once I've decided on the product, I do my keyword research before I even place the first order. I will use Keyword Inspector and do reverse ASIN match. So I'll look at my top competitors that are selling. I'll do a reverse ASIN match on them to see through Keyword Inspector. I will use Scientific Seller, which scrapes the Amazon type-in suggestion box. I use Google Keyword Planner a little bit, but not too much because I don't find it to be very good. Google Keyword Planner is good for research. People on Google aren't looking primarily to buy. They're looking for information. So some of the words they type are not really associated with your product. I'll try it, but I don't put a whole lot of weight into that. I'll go in Merchant Words. I'll go Helium 10, a few others. I'm drawn a blank now on a list of some of them. But
oh, there's so many on there, but yeah.
Five or six of them. So I'll download all that data into one massive, I use a software called Helium 10. I download that and dump all those keywords in phrase order into this software, and it goes through and it dedupes it all for me. And it tells me which words appear the most. So if there's a certain word that's appearing the most in all these different keywords from all these different sources, that's probably a pretty important keyword. So you can just rank them by appearance. So the words that only appear one time are more of a long tail. The words that appear 500 times are probably something you need to really make sure you have in your listing. I'll sort them, and then I'll use that tool to actually build out my listing, because it as you take a word away from your master list, if you're typing it in your bullet points, your title, it takes it out of the master list. So it's really good software to speed up the process of making sure you've covered all your bases and dotted all your I's and crossed your T's.
That sounds really very powerful. Yeah, that's excellent, because it's a hell of a lot of guesswork and manual work around keywords, I've personally found. And dedupe is, do you get rid of duplications, i.e. keywords that you said twice, is that right?
Yeah, I don't repeat keywords. I mean, right now, Amazon keeps changing the way everything works.
Right.
And so this, whenever someone listens to this, this may be totally invalid at that point. But as of right now, the title is critical. And any keyword phrases in the title will index. So if I come to my product and say my product is a blue garlic press, anytime someone types in the word garlic press and it makes a sale, it will also index me for blue and press, or blue and garlic. So any combination of the words in your keyword title, you'll get indexed for. It's very powerful right now. I don't know if Amazon is going to change that, but you can get a lot of extra benefit right now by having association with any words in your key, in your title.
So if I put in blue garlic press and I got sold on the word garlic press, it will also index me for blue garlic press as a longer tail keyword. Is that right?
Correct. As of right now.
As of right now, no. Noted. But that's very, very powerful to know.
Yeah, there's people that are using some of the launch services and doing giveaways right now just for that reason. Just they're giving away 200 just so they can rank for like 10 different keywords by mixing and matching. Having Amazon mix and match their title phrases automatically on the backside. The next thing that's indexed are your bullets. Amazon tells you a lot of times the bullets aren't indexed. It's bullshit. They do index them as of now. So every word in your bullets is indexed. In most categories, they do not index your description. You have to be a little careful there on your description, so I wouldn't be overly concerned too much with keywords in there. And then your back end. Now you have – most categories have 1,000 words per line. And what I'm discovering right now is Amazon is not indexing all 1,000 on each all 5,000. So it's 5 lines of 1,000. They keep monkeying with this, and not all those words are indexing back there. And I'm trying to figure out exactly how many it is. I think I'm zeroing in on the way it works by doing some testing, but I would recommend whatever keywords that are strong and you really want to make sure get indexed, they need to be in your first line. And then your second line, and then your third, fourth, and fifth line should be words that you're not as concerned about.
Makes sense. I mean, that seems to be like the universal law of search engines and search algorithms, that the earlier something appears, it works. When I say universal law, I mean, okay, a tendency. I realize that the actual detail of it could be mind-blowing and will probably change.
I think Amazon is only indexing a certain number of words right now.
Right.
I don't think they're indexing the entire thing. I'm trying to determine what that number of words is. There's software. You can do this manually. You can go out and take your ASIN, type it in the search bar of Amazon, and then take a keyword, put it next to it, and see if it appears. And you can verify it that way. And there's also tools out there that will do that for you in a much quicker way. That's important to do, is just don't just put your listing up and assume everything's okay, because Amazon likes to monkey around and play. So you need to trust but verify.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was yet another dose. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was another dose of the Kevin King magic. The directness and the frankness of that man are fantastic in a space where there's a lot of BS being short. And he's clearly not a man who tolerates BS, and quite right too, because there's too much of it around. Really like the detail that he goes into. There's so many really practical things, like how to approach top reviewers, getting an Amazon video review done as soon as you can, so it shows up on page one. I mean, it's kind of obvious when you think about it, but video has been converting better than text for quite a few, you know, years on different media and different websites as well. But it's kind of obvious it does the same on Amazon. But thanks to Kevin, we now know we've got some proof behind it. And the importance of the importance of looking at the Amazon ads keyword report and really understanding it, and the difference between ACoS and other such things, and the true cost per unit of your advertising spend, and exactly how to deal with that. So HelloProfit, something I keep hearing about from different people, so that's something I'll be checking out. I know there's a new tool coming up soon which is supposed to be replacing that, or not necessarily replacing it, but in competition for it, which I will be telling you about as well. And yeah, lots of very detailed stuff, really. Product launch, you know, again, the emphasis on quality, which is something that Kevin is obviously very, very into the whole time, all the way through the entire business, really. So, folks, I am bringing you the brightest and the best and the most experienced people that I can get on Amazon. And these people are really for real. They're serious. They are doing the numbers, as Kevin himself said. So please read the show notes, but please also bear in mind that this is free. It is always going to be free. The podcast is free. The show notes are free. The Facebook, by the way, is also free. Do come and join us there, www.amazingfba.com/FBF, as in face, B as in book. The Facebook group is growing by the day. Yesterday, I had something like 10 applicants, actually, for the group, which it's surprising, but pleasing, I guess. So it's all to play for, guys. Please come and support us there and give your input as well as asking your questions. All I need in return, folks, isn't money. It is just all I need is love. I need some iTunes love from you guys. I need to get more reviews because I want to get the word out to as many people as I can in the UK about this good stuff. So please leave us an iTunes review. I'm going to leave a little space now for John Lee Dumas to tell us more about that. By the way, I just started using the ATR 2100 Audio-Technica mic, which I hope you're noticing is improving the quality. We're aiming to improve everything across the board, guys, just to help you and make your life a better thing. All I need is that iTunes review. Don't forget it. Speech in the next podcast.
Hey, this is John Lee Dumas of EO Fire, and you're listening to Amazing FBA with the marvelous Michael Veazey, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. You must be prepared to ignite.
Thanks to John Lee Dumas there of Entrepreneur on Fire for that wonderful audio bumper. That was my reward for leaving him a podcast review on iTunes. And you can get the same thing. Just go to www.amazingfba.com/iTunes review or go to the blog amazingfba.com and look for leave an iTunes review in the menu bar, and then you just need to leave a review, take a screenshot of it. If it takes you 24 hours to get the review, don't panic, then email that to me at michael@amazingfba.com. Phew, so why do this? Well, because I will offer you in exchange, in return, a free email consultation on your biggest Amazon problem right now. This is normally only available to members of my mentees. There's only six of them at the moment, and it's sort of between five or six people. So it's very, very limited access to me on email. If you otherwise email with your questions, I will simply respond. You need to put it up in the Facebook group. So I can't give you one-to-one help normally, but this is your opportunity to get it. So if you want to do that, guys, just leave an iTunes review, take a screenshot, email it to me along with your question, michael@amazingfba.com, and I will personally answer your query in detail. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. I really appreciate it. Now, over to you. First, 80-20 everything. Learn the critical few. Maybe there's one thing in this podcast that can make all the difference. Find that thing. 20% of inputs give 80% of the outputs, which are the critical few for you. Then take action. Imperfect action beats perfect inaction every single time. Finally, and not least, review. If you've made mistakes, learn from them. If you've made a success, duplicate it. You can't do that unless you look back. So in summary, learn the critical few, then do, then review. And then, my friend, it's up to you. That's it. Thank you so much for your attention. Speak to you in the next episode.